structure of business. We're going to talk about how to organize a business legally. And we've lost our lawyers, so we won't have any checks and balances. We'll just have to go with what we come up with. And let's see, I forget, is that model, I don't know if that's in, no, that's not in yours. I'll find it in mine and just go over it very quickly about, thank you for the, let's see. I should have found that before I started. Well, I guess I'm not going to find it, but I know it anyway. But let's go over the structures of a business. How to formalize and form a business. I've heard a lot of you talking about it different times. And do we have a speaker gambling over here? Every business has to be formalized in some way to be legal. The simplest way is sole proprietorship. You're just who you are, and you're going to go do what you're going to do. And you can go easily to your local town, city, and go to their office and take out a tax permit for your sole proprietorship. You have to have a name for it, you have to register it, you have to do the same thing with the state, and away you go. And that's, but by far, there are more sole proprietorships than anything else in terms of just numbers. Yes, Ed?
I was just going to add that is required because you can't, President Barlow, you can jump in here. I don't think a bank will accept you opening a business account under the ABC company unless you can show them that you've registered your name with the Secretary of State of the State of Colorado.
All right. So banks will require that.
That's right.
Good. Thank you.
You can't bypass.
So you want to be legal. And that's the simplest form of legalizing and starting a business. And then next can be a partnership. A partnership can be under lots of, it can be the partnership between the husband and the wife. It can be a partnership between you and a friend, or you and a sibling, or whoever you choose to have it. Once you start bringing someone else into the picture, so you don't get a ma and pa incident happening, you need to formalize the agreement. And I have a model here on, let's pass these real quick and go to the partnership agreement since we're doing this now. Okay, so for partners, there needs to be an agreement. The model I put here just for example is kind of real estate oriented, but you can just adjust it. It's not in your book. None of this is in your book that we're doing right now. So the key to a partnership is getting all the agreements signed and agreed to up front before the business starts, before anybody's investment goes into it. We agree in full principle and details what we're going to do. That agreement's put in writing, and we both sign it, or the three of us sign it, or however many are involved. Everyone gets their signed copy. And then, per our agreement, we invest our funds and we go do whatever we're going to do and start that partnership moving forward. And there are lots of other options. There's joint venture between partnerships. There's joint venture between people. But these principles in right now are just some of the basic principles. Just there are others, but we could spend too much time on this, so we just have a few. So what do you do? How do you address if one of you wants to go into another business? Well, you need to have that agreed up front. So if one partner decides they want to go do something else, how's that going to affect us? And are we okay with that? Or is that going to create a conflict that's not acceptable to us? Well, you have to decide that. Well, here's what they decided in this one. Each partner is free to start any side business, as long as it's not duplicating their existing business. So that's their agreement. So you can't, and certainly anyone that's in that needs to go to their partners and say, this is what I'm thinking about doing. It doesn't compete with us in our partnership. It won't be a conflict of interest on my part. Are you okay with that? That's the right thing to do before you do it, not after having them hear from somebody else that you went out and started something unbeknownst to them. Okay. Okay, business disputes. Stuff can happen. We saw that with Ma and Pa and forget the name of the other guy standing over there.
Billy.
Billy and a couple other guys standing there too. I forget who they were. Anyway, business disputes can happen. So how do we handle it? Any disputes will be resolved through mediation, arbitration, and not through any litigation. That's a good agreement to have. All partnership agreements should be, and maybe we should take should out of there and say, must be in writing with the signatures of all partners. So, partnerships are easy to start, easy to get into, and hard to get out of. So, have agreements. Have agreements so that when it if it happens, I say when. We've been in partnerships that we wished that were fine for a while, turned out not to be that fine for very long.
You're talking about partnerships with somebody other than your wife? Or you
yes, 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 yes.
Well, yeah, but I meant from a business standpoint.
Yes, yes. We have been, yes, outside
or
of
what
our
what I meant by that, I guess, or from a legal standpoint, like, okay, well, we don't want ABC Incorporated now to... We want to not use that, and we want to change the name of the company and do something else. You know, what we were doing diamonds, now we're going to do
that. No, I don't know. We haven't had that complication.
Okay.
The point I'm making with this is if you sign agreements in advance, you have details in advance, your odds of success in a partnership are good. I prefer our business. We were the sole owners and operators. We had no partners. We had no complications. They didn't have to answer to anybody as long as we could pay the bank, make our payroll, and pay our bills, and pay our taxes. We were pretty independent. And we liked that. We liked that. But that doesn't mean partnerships and partners aren't good. We know of many that are wonderful. Because many times in a partnership, you have partners that have complementing talents. One partner very strong here, weak here. The other one's very strong here, weak here. Together, they're a strong, high-performing partnership. And also, not only that, partnerships, they can each bring capital in. So there's capital there to start and to operate, and there's other funds available. Sometimes one partner operates, and the other partner's a partner, but what some would call a silent partner who puts money in but doesn't deal in the day-to-day operations, enabling the other person to get a business started, otherwise he wouldn't be able to because of the capital of the silent partner. That's not unusual, and that can be a very good thing, provided there's agreements in place so that everybody can be happy. Nothing worse than an unhappy silent partner jabbing and meddling and disrupting the partner that's trying to run the thing. And so if there's agreements in advance how that relationship's going to be, the odds of that being successful and positive are good. And if there aren't any, then you're vulnerable to the alternative. So the agreements in writing. Yes, Chuck?
On a limited liability partnership, it can be dissolved when the goals were reached.
Oh, absolutely. The partnership, right now, this is just a straight partnership. We haven't gone into the LLCs yet, but they can be. They can be a partnership for a month until we accomplish this, and it's agreed in advance. As soon as we accomplish that, at the end of the month, we dissolve it and shut it down. Typically, still, you have to register for the state, and then if you do shut it down, you have to send in a closing or a report, and you have to file a tax return, all those things for it. So, All of these have requirements with them. They all have positives and negatives about why you go with one and not the other. And so there are the limited liability company, the limited liability partnerships. They're just a legal entity that gives some space between the customer and the partners legally. But they have their requirements by the state and the local government agencies that you have to comply with. With those, you have to re-register them every year and pay a fee. And if you do that online, it costs you $10 or something. If you try to walk into their office and do it, it'll cost you $100. And so you have to learn all of it. You can do all that yourself, or you can pay someone to do it for you. And there's no reason to. It's very easy to do. Go online, if you have a credit card, you put it in, and you're re-registered every year. You have to redo it every year, though. I mean, the key is not forgetting. That's the challenge for some of us. We forget, but also we realize we're out of compliance. And what they do, they just say, I forget their legal term, but essentially they say your LLC is no longer recognized because it's out of...
Expired.
What is it?
Expired or re-registered?
Yeah, they have a term. I don't think it's either, but it's like that. And as soon as you re-register, pay your fee, it's instant, right back on in order. We had a piece of property we were selling, and we forgot about it. It was in the LLC, and it was out, and they went to close, and the title company says, your LLC expired.
No longer in good standing.
That's it. That's the word. No longer in good standing. And so we can't close this till you're in good standing, because the LLC owns the property. And so get on the computer, go online. I forget how you go. You start Colorado.gov, and then you go to
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. And then there's links for re-registering a business, and you just click to that, and it comes up. It can be aggravating, like a lot of those things, Barb, but you can get it done. It might take a little while. And the second you push the button, I don't know if it's a second, but very soon after that, the title company in that case could call, check on it, and show we were in good standing. Close the deal, and it's fine.
You get a secret.
So it's that simple. Pardon me?
I said you get can print out a certificate that says that your business is valid and in good standing. But if you let it go for any amount of time, someone else could come and take your name.
Probably could. They probably could. I would think you'd be vulnerable for that. So that's a risk.
Well, they send a card. They send me a card every year.
Is that right? They don't send me anything. Do they send us one? Oh, I guess I ignore it. Sorry. You want to shake your face?
I had a discussion with the Secretary of State about the protection of your trade name. There is no protection. That fee does not protect your trade name. It might protect your corporation, it will not protect your doing business as it. Anybody can come in and pay the fee and away they go.
Okay.
What do you do?
You have to hire a lawyer and go to court. You get one that way.
What do you do to protect corporations?
There's no protection for a trade name.
Well, why can't
in this state?
Then why do they charge us?
Well, it's just like a licensing thing.
It's $10, so it's just so they can record it.
It's a recording, and you can go to your customer base and say, we are registered with the state, or you go to the bank and say, we're registered.
But I think that's pretty low risk for you. It can happen, but it probably doesn't happen very often. Once you're there, there's legal. If you have a history that establishes who you've been and what you've been doing, the longer you've been there, the harder it would be for someone to successfully take your name.
They can register your name and use your name. As you say, if you're established in the community, you've got to hire a lawyer and go into civil court and fight for it, and you'll probably win, but it costs you.
Yes. Unfortunately, in a free, open society, those things can happen. I'll tell you what, it's a lot better than the alternative. Being in a country where you have no rights, you can't even go protect yourself, so we're better off. Okay. So LLC, LLP, joint venture, and then you go to the corporations in incorporating, and typically that's an S, subchapter S, or a C. Today's world, today's tax laws, most everyone's a subchapter S, unless there's some reason why they're a C. And then public publicly traded company, that's a whole other world. But typically, you want to start small. You can change, I think, once in the history of your company. Because we started out, there was a day when you were better off to be a C-Corp. And we were a C-Corp for like 10 years, a long time ago. And then our accountant, we're analyzing it, and he says, you know, this is the taxes are changing. You need to switch to an S-Corp. And so they allow you to do that one time. Once you've done it, it's done. So any questions about formal ways of organizing business?
Just a comment. When you start getting into some of those corporations and stuff, make sure that you understand what you're doing. You probably ought to get a little bit of help because some of those things are pretty specific in what you have to do once you have those things registered and what the state expects you to do.
Absolutely.
The minutes that you have to have.
Minutes, that's right. Excellent. Thank you. Yes, there are requirements, and if you don't fulfill those requirements, then it's legally it can be like you didn't even incorporate. If someone is legally pursuing you for some reason, it's just like it's not there, and whoever's pursuing the corporation just comes straight to you.
You have to have a board meeting.
Yeah, you have to have periodic meetings and all that. And there's a lot of small businesses that are pretty weak on that. So, yes.
One last item, that Colorado Resource Guide that you mentioned walks you through the pros and cons of all of
good.
Those.
Good.
Okay. That's very, very good.
So you all heard that, Colorado Resource Guide.